Lisa. Lisa Brennan, however, did not have a great childhood. When she was young, her father almost never came to see her. "I didn't want to be a father, so I wasn't," Jobs later said, with only a touch of remorse in his voice. Yet occasionally he felt the tug. One day when Lisa was 3, Jobs was driving near the house he had bought for her and Chris Ann, and he decided to stop. Lisa didn't know who he was. He sat on the doorstep, not venturing inside, and talked to Chris Ann. The scene was repeated once or twice a year. Jobs would come by unannounced, talk a little bit about Lisa's school options or other issues, then drive off in his Mercedes. But by the time Lisa turned 8 in 1986, the visits were occurring more frequently. Jobs was no longer immersed in the grueling push to create the Macintosh or the subsequent power struggles with Scully. He was at Next, which was calmer, friendlier, and headquartered in Palo Alto, near where Chris Ann and Lisa lived. In addition, by the time she was in 3rd grade, it was clear that Lisa was a smart and artistic kid who had already been singled out by her teachers for her writing ability. She was spunky and high-spirited and had a little of her father's defiant attitude. She also looked a bit like him, with arched eyebrows and a faintly Middle Eastern angularity. One day, to the surprise of his colleagues, he brought her by the office. As she turned cartwheels in the corridor, she squealed, "Look at me!" Avi Tavanian, a lanky and gregarious engineer at Next who had become Jobs' friend, remembers that every now and then, when they were going out to dinner, they would stop by Chris Ann's house to pick up Lisa. "He was very sweet to her," Tavanian recalled. "He was a vegetarian, and so was Chris Ann, but she wasn't. He was fine with that. He suggested she order chicken, and she did." Eating chicken became her little indulgence as she shuttled between 2 parents who were vegetarians with a spiritual regard for natural foods. "We bought our groceries, our punterella, quinoa, celeriac, carob-covered nuts, in yeasty-smelling stores where the women didn't dye their hair," she later wrote about her time with her mother. "But we sometimes tasted foreign treats. A few times we bought a hot, seasoned chicken from a gourmet shop with rows and rows of chickens turning on spits, and ate it in the car from the foil-lined paper bag with our fingers." Her father, whose dietary fixations came in fanatic waves, was more fastidious about what he ate. She watched him spit out a mouthful of soup one day after learning that it contained butter. After loosening up a bit while at Apple, he was back to being a strict vegan. Even at a young age, Lisa began to realize his diet obsessions reflected a life philosophy, one in which asceticism and minimalism could heighten subsequent sensations. He believed that great harvests came from arid sources, pleasure from restraint, she noted. He knew the equations that most people didn't know. Things led to their opposites. In a similar way, the absence and coldness of her father made his occasional moments of warmth so much more intensely gratifying. "I didn't live with him, but he would stop by our house some days, a deity among us for a few tingling moments or hours," she recalled. Lisa soon became interested enough that he would take walks with her. He would also go rollerblading with her on the quiet streets of old Palo Alto, often stopping at the houses of Joanna Hoffman and Andy Hertzfeld. The first time he brought her around to see Hoffman, he just knocked on the door and announced, "This is Lisa." Hoffman knew right away. "It was obvious she was his daughter," she told me. "Nobody has that jaw. It's a signature jaw." Hoffman, who suffered from not knowing her own divorced father until she was 10, encouraged Jobs to be a better father. He followed her advice and later thanked her for it. Once he took Lisa on a business trip to Tokyo, and they stayed at the sleek and businesslike Okura Hotel. At the elegant downstairs sushi bar, Jobs ordered large trays of unagi sushi, a dish he loved so much that he allowed the warm-cooked eel to pass muster as vegetarian. The pieces were coated with fine salt or a thin sweet sauce, and Lisa remembered later how they dissolved in her mouth. So too did the distance between them. As she later wrote, "It was the first time I'd felt with him so relaxed and content over those trays of meat. The excess, the permission and warmth after the cold salads, meant a once inaccessible space had opened." He was less rigid with himself, even human, under the great ceilings with the little chairs, with the meat, and me. But it was not always sweetness and light. Jobs was as mercurial with Lisa as he was with almost everyone, cycling between embrace and abandonment. On one visit he would be playful, on the next he would be cold. Often he was not there at all. She was always unsure of their relationship, according to Hertzfeld. "I went to a birthday party of hers, and Steve was supposed to come, and he was very, very late. She got extremely anxious and disappointed. But when he finally did come, she totally lit up." Lisa learned to be temperamental in return. Over the years, their relationship would be a roller coaster, with each of the low points elongated by their shared stubbornness. After a falling out, they could go for months not speaking to each other. Neither one was good at reaching out, apologizing, or making the effort to heal, even when he was wrestling with repeated health problems. One day in the fall of 2010, he was wistfully going through a box of old snapshots with me and paused over one that showed him visiting Lisa when she was young. "I probably didn't go over there enough," he said. Since he had not spoken to her all that year, I asked if he might want to reach out to her with a call or email. He looked at me blankly for a moment, then went back to riffling through other old photographs.